Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The approaching holidays are times when many people like to get together with a family and share a meal, but many may not have reliable access to food and are at risk of going hungry. The USDA says back in 2022, the number of households in the country that are food insecure is significantly higher than the year prior, an increase of more than 3 million households facing hunger. And that spike in food insecurity includes households in Sacramento County. The city of Elk Grove is one organization that is working to reduce that total and ensure that vulnerable populations, especially its older members, have stable access to food for the holidays and beyond. Dr. Suman Singha is the board chair for the Elk Grove Food Bank Services and joins us now with more. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for taking the time. I imagine it's a very busy time for you as we're in the holidays. Can you tell us a little bit about the Elk Grove Food Bank, who you serve, and also how you got involved?
Well, let me start with how I got involved. When I retired, given my background in food and agriculture, this was a logical place. Nobody in the United States should go hungry, so it was a very logical place to volunteer. So I started in the warehouse and I'm now the board chair. In terms of food insecurity in Elk Grove, I mean, it is not just an Elk Grove issue. It is really a national issue when you think about it. And the fact that data supports that really one in eight Americans is food insecure, which is a startling number when you think about it. In Elk Grove, the food bank currently serves 14,000 people. So when you think about the population of 182,000, that's almost what? It's over 7% of our population tends to be food insecure. So but amongst this group of 14,000 clients that we have, about a quarter of them are senior citizens and another quarter are children.
You mentioned that, you know, 14,000 residents in need in your city is roughly 7% of food insecurity. How has that number changed or even grown in recent years? When I've talked to the Sacramento Food Bank, which serves over 100 food pantries and other food banks across the county, I mean, at one point, those in need had almost doubled, you know, during the pandemic. Did you experience that as well in Elk Grove?
Yes, we did. In the pre-pandemic period, we were serving about 6,000 clients. During the pandemic, we actually went into, we had about 22,000 clients. The number dropped down after the pandemic, but has again increased now to 14,000. One of the reasons for which, of course, is, I think, given the current inflation rate, a lot of people are having a hard time making ends meet. So, yes, our numbers compared to the pre-pandemic period are more than double what they used to be.
Yeah, and at one point over triple than what it used to be. And it's good to see that number go in the right direction and that number decrease. I mean, you mentioned that you are also very focused on older members in your community. Oftentimes, food insecurity is something that we don't really think about. It's not seen in public, and it could actually impact households that are on our very block. What do you want people to know about the older population in Elk Grove and the increasing need of food assistance and food insecurity?
Well, thank you for that question, because I think for the older population, it is really a major challenge, the issue of food insecurity. In fact, of our clients, one in five seniors has at times got to choose between food and medicine or food and shelter. And to think this is in the richest country in the world. So that is always a challenge. And we are serving, when I look at a population, about 2,000 of our lower income seniors live on less than $1,200 a month. I mean, they're relying on Social Security and supplemental security income, which amounts to about $1,200 a month in many cases. So you can imagine trying to pay rent, utilities for medicine, food, etc., for your necessities out of that sort of money. I mean, you cannot make ends meet. So one of the questions I know people have asked me in the past is, why didn't these individuals plan better? The answer, I think, what I suggest everybody read a book called Nickel and Dimed by Barbara Ehrenreich, which came out in 2001. It is as relevant today as it was in 2001. And what she points out is that at low-wage jobs, you cannot make it to the end of the month on those wages. And God forbid that you have any unexpected expenditure, like your car breaks down or you have a medical bill that you did not expect. So when you can barely make it the end of the end of the month, it is very difficult to plan long term when you have no retirement income, no retirement plan. So these are folks who worked very, very hard all their lives. These are the people who we were dependent on during their working life. And now they're at a point in the quote-unquote golden years with having a hard time making ends meet.
Yeah, and making very difficult choices that someone should not have to make. I know that the holidays, you know, we do talk about food insecurity and that can be tied to the holidays, but food insecurity is 365 days a year. You know, how are the holidays, I guess, a snapshot of what food insecurity is in Elk Grove? I mean, do you see the need in people who need food assistance higher during the later months of the year, during the holidays?
What's a different sort of approach during the holidays? I mean, as you just said, food insecurity occurs 365 days of the year. But during the holidays, I mean, these are times like Thanksgiving, when you're giving thanks, it's very difficult on people who are less fortunate. I mean, how do you celebrate Thanksgiving and see your kids do without because you cannot afford a turkey and the fixings? So it becomes a very difficult time for people. I mean, when the world is celebrating and you have little or nothing. So I think this becomes a critical period. And for Thanksgiving this year, we had 1,500 families sign up for turkeys, which was three times as many as what we had last year. So it was a bit of a challenge. And this is when our executive director and Marie Giacchino and the vice mayor, Kevin Spies, went on television. And the result of that was we've got an outpouring of support and donations from our community. And I would really like to thank a few people. I mean, Kevin and Angela Spies, Assemblyman Stephanie Wynn, Gil and Kay Albiani, Jeffrey Atkins, and Republic Services. These folks came together to make sure that everybody got a turkey, and we have enough turkeys to meet our distribution on Saturday.
That is great. I mean, you went from several hundred last year to around 1,500 turkey requests. As you mentioned, that's over twofold. That's nearly threefold. With your experience working, you know, with food insecurity, with food assistance, I mean, it clearly exceeded your expectations. But even as you know the nuances and the challenges of food insecurity and how it's grown, was it surprising for you that number hit 1,500 families?
Well, in one way, it's surprising. And in another way, it's not, because one of the challenges I see for the country as a whole and Elk Grove as a part of it is the fact that we are getting more people in the high-paying manufacturing jobs moved away a long time ago. Now we are running into automation. We're also seeing a lot of baby boomers retiring. So I don't see food insecurity lessening in the immediate future. If anything, I see things getting worse.
And what other ways does the food bank help? It's not just food, right? You assist in other ways for essentials.
Right, we do. I mean, what we do besides having people come to the food bank at the food bank building, we do have six mobile distribution sites where we go and meet our senior citizens at affordable senior apartments where we distribute food there. And then we have a number of medically fragile seniors who we actually deliver, for homebound, we deliver food directly to them. But besides food, we also have a clothes closet. So if you're in need of clothing, you can come to us. We will provide clothing to you. So those are sort of, and then we have other support services, which again, for people like CalFresh, et cetera, which we provide to our clients. So between food and clothing and sort of general assistance, we do work with veterans organizations to make sure our veterans' needs, not just for food, which we meet, are met. So for instance, Larry Sahota, who's the commander of American Legion Post 55, is a member of the board of directors of the Elk Grove Food Bank. And he's always there to support and work for the needs of veterans who need assistance. Mm.
If someone's listening to this and they want to help you out, what kind of donations do you need right now? Where can people kind of make the biggest dent for that would help the Elk Grove Food Bank?
Well, we're always, I mean, we've met our need for turkeys for Thanksgiving, but we're always looking for non-perishable foods, canned goods, and or money, which you can donate directly. You can go on our website at elkgrovefoodbank.org. And you can donate there, because whether it is money or which we then can use to purchase food, or if you provide donations of food at our warehouse on Kent Street. And if you live in the Elk Grove area, I mean, one of the reasons we do as good a job as we do, and we are very efficient with the money we get. In fact, 94 cents of every dollar we get goes directly to services, to food and services, is the fact that we have a large number of volunteers. So if you would like to volunteer, please go to our website of the Elk Grove Food Bank, and we would love to have you come and support us.
That's wonderful. I was going to talk about volunteers, but it's also great to hear that 94 cents of every dollar goes directly to services that you provide.
Right. We run the reason we run such a efficient organization is our overhead is very low. We focus primarily on food and the catches. The reason we can do it is because we've got hundreds of volunteers who work at the warehouse, work in the during the distribution at the affordable senior apartments. And if it wasn't, I mean, volunteering is what really makes so much of America work, especially where the needs are great.
Suman, thank you so much for the time.
Well, thank you ever so much for having us, and I wish you a very happy Thanksgiving.
You as well. Suman Singha is the board chair for the Elk Grove Food Bank Services, which is working to feed those in need and letting us know what donations are still needed and how they are helping members in their community, a need that is growing. Up next, a Stockton organization is raising awareness about youth experiencing homelessness, and they're stepping in to help. The nonprofit joins us ahead of their Light Up the Night mixer. It's happening this evening at Weberstown Mall. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. Each year, millions of youth and young adults across the country experience some form of homelessness. And that concentration can be felt in California, which is home to the largest unhoused population in the country. The experience of having unstable housing can have lasting impacts on a person's life, from limited education access to poor mental or physical health. However, one local nonprofit has been raising awareness while also providing help to these young, vulnerable members in their community. This evening, they'll be holding a Light Up the Night mixer event at Weberstown Mall in Stockton. Here to tell us more is Elizabeth Sanchez, the director of the community engagement at Prevail. Good morning, Elizabeth. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Vicky, and thank you for having us here. We're glad to be here.
It is an important topic. I would love to start off with your background and how you got involved with helping, you know, some of the youngest members in our community who are experiencing homelessness.
Well, you know, Prevail was formerly known as Women's Center Youth and Family Services. We were established back in 1969 as one of the main providers of services for victims of domestic abuse, sexual assault, and human trafficking in San Joaquin County. Now, let me mention that even though we are located in San Joaquin County, we take clients and calls from all over California. Therefore, we have a lot of communication with also, you know, Sacramento, Stanislaus, and all the surrounding, even all the way to Fresno, all the surrounding areas. So we started there, right, in 1969, helping victims of family violence. However, unfortunately, you know, when there is a primary victim of family violence in the household, we realized that the kids, the children, were impacted as well. Lasting effects go, you know, through generations. So really, in order to make a real impact in the issue, we decided to join forces with Family and Youth Services, becoming before Prevail, Women's Center Youth and Family Services, and expanding all our services to youth at risk and experiencing homelessness or family violence. Therefore, you know, we were able to set up case management, shelters. Today, we not only provide services to victims of domestic abuse, sexual assault, and human trafficking, but also we have a day dropping center where any youth ages 12 to 25 can stop by, super low barrier, no questions asked. We can provide 3 meals a day. We have a shower, washer and dryer, clothing closet, computer lab, charging stations. And then if they are ready to connect with services, we make sure they have that access. We have staff on site, we have clinicians, we have substance abuse counselors. And then we also connect them with two of our shelters. We have two youth shelters. One of them, it's for youth ages 12 to 17. So it's for minors that are at risk running away or you know, fleeing any form of violence. And then we have another emergency shelter for ages 18 to 25. Called Opportunity House, where they also can apply for our transitional living program. If they are approved, they get to live with us for 22 months. And let me mention that any of our four shelters, we receive any client of any gender and their minor children as well. So it's a pretty neat program. You know, they give the youth the opportunity to get back on their feet and to really have stability as they grow into adulthood. We also have a street outreach team that it's day in and day out in the literally hitting the streets looking for youth that may need our services. So it's, you know, an honor to work for this agency that has grown beyond what we initially thought it was going to be in 1969. And now we're a full agency providing wraparound services for those that need them in moments that are probably at their worst.
Elizabeth, how did you develop a passion for this? I mean, have you been touched with this throughout your life personally? How did you get so involved in helping these members? I mean, you talk about helping people from the ages of 12 to 25 gain some stability.
Yes, for me personally, Vicky, and it's funny that you ask, I actually used to work in radio station back in Tennessee. Being a host at a radio station, I was invited to get involved, you know, as you will understand, with several agencies, nonprofits, and one of them was at that time the YWCA. I got involved with this line of work. And of course, you know, I think that it's really hard to find somebody in this world that has not been touched by any of these factors at a personal level. We all know if it hasn't happened to you, I'm sure it has happened to somebody you know. Family violence, sexual assault, unfortunately, it's still very prevalent in our community, And of course, you know, youth impacted by those victimizations have a harder time getting back on their feet. And how can they really experience what, you know, a healthy relationship is when they have never had that role model in their household? So with the personal passion that I have for this topic and then the opportunities that the radio brought to me, I decided to change gears, and here I am 20 years later, still doing this line of work. I always say this line of work, it's not for everyone, but it's so much needed. And once you get your heart into it, there's no going back. And I say that for myself and for all the staff, that amazing staff we have at Prevail.
As you know, Elizabeth, I mean, California has an house population that I believe is record levels. It's the largest in the country. However, it looks differently. It looks differently depending on where you live. If you live in a rural area, if you live through the Central Valley, if you live in an urban or metro area, given that you're a nonprofit, you really help people across multiple counties. I mean, what does homelessness, this issue, what does it look like in your home, in your community, and the people you serve?
Yes. So, you know, homelessness, and I should say, you know, November, it's Homeless and Runaway Youth Awareness Month. And when we started this program to really help homeless youth, we had to go through a learning curve, because everybody thinks, you know, homeless youth, they're going to be in encampments, we're going to be able to find them. Homelessness for an adult in our area and a youth looks very different. A young kid with a backpack walking down the street at a bus station, you wouldn't think much about it. But that's how a youth that is experiencing housing and instability looks like. They're not in the camps. The camps represent a very high risk for their safety. They can be prey very easily. So we had to learn to really think outside the box and look beyond what your eye sees, mm-hmm. to identify those youth, finding ways to connect with them. Youth that are experiencing homelessness, maybe that youth that it's couch surfing, sleeping in their cars. You know, if you ask them, are you homeless? They'll say no. But if you take a little bit more time and ask them, where did you name all the places where you've been sleeping in the past 2 weeks, in the past month, you'll come to realize that they are switching places just to stay safe, just to stay afloat. But that doesn't mean that they have stable housing. Just to give you some numbers, in the United States, there's estimated 4.2 million youth between ages of 13 and 25 experiencing homelessness. California alone represented 3,400 calls to the Youth National Homeless Hotline last year. And, you know, in our little niche of the woods here in Prevail in the San Joaquin County, we receive about 150 youth in our shelters. I know that doesn't sound like a large number, but that's youth that, you know, stayed for over a month or even months. So our transitional living program, we cannot have like that high of a rotation because they stay longer with us. But that's a lot of youth. We were able to serve almost 300 youth in our dropping center. Just to give you an idea, those 300 youth represent almost 4,000 meals that we provided. So it's youth that they don't come for one day. They don't just visit us one day. Yes, they are 300, but 300 that we serve through a whole entire year, coming in, showering, getting meals. We were able to find and connect over 200 youth on the streets that needed our services. So this is an ongoing crisis. And in our community, you know, we try to hit as many locations as we can where we know youth gather. And these opportunities just to speak up and share our services are really important to us, because we cannot be at every single place at all times. But somebody in your audience is listening today. Somebody reads a flyer. Somebody sits in a presentation. And that person that can convey our message and connect with those that need the services. So that's why campaigns like these are really important to make an impact on the issue of homelessness, especially for youth.
Yeah, and given that you serve people as young as 12 years old, what is often missing from the conversation? Many people wouldn't think that a 12-year-old would need services like your nonprofit provides, that is a runaway or is experiencing housing instability or even homelessness.
So, you know, when you speak about youth homelessness, I think there's this misconception of, oh, they're behaving bad, they don't want to follow the rules, they're probably involved in substances, and parents kick them out. And yes, a portion of the youth experiencing homelessness have that, you know, are in that situation. But the majority of the youth that are running away from home or end up homeless, are running away to stay safe from family violence. It's family dynamics. Adults don't realize that, you know, whatever happens at home, and we think, oh, it's only between me and my partner, or, you know, it's not the youth are a different thing. The reality is that the youth feel it and they deal with the consequences. So the second reason why youth in our community are running away or experiencing instability in their housing situation may be emotional and verbal abuse. So, you know, sometimes parents, and I get it, right? We're struggling financially. We're working one or two jobs. We're barely making meets end. And then we have this teenager that it's being a teenager. And believe me, I'm a mom of two, okay? So I know firsthand that sometimes it gets hectic. It gets crazy. But I think the lack of coping skills, educating parents how to deal with stressors in our day-to-day life, plus raising youth in this time and date, forces parents to sometimes not be aware of how much damage we can cause with our words, with our example. And youth are in a very vulnerable state when they need that. They need stability. They need to feel loved, validated, accepted. You know, a large population of LGBTQ plus youth end up in the streets because of who they expressing who they are, and not the family not knowing how to navigate those conversations. So there's a lot. And then also, of course, you know, with the economy, the way it's going, a lot of youth end up homeless with their parents because they're financially struggling, and they end up in a situation where they lose their income, they lose their household, and they are all together living, you know, as a family on the streets. And it can, I think youth homelessness has many faces, but what it's a constant, it's whatever happens once a youth is living on the streets.
Well, and it's great that your nonprofit exists, you know, because I mean, you even touched upon, like, sometimes there's like a moral component that's attached to children that are runaways or experiencing housing insecurity, which to me is kind of crazy given that they're children and they're still growing and developing. And, you know, and you laid out what could be happening, you know, at home. You also are participating in an awareness campaign. You mentioned that this month is an awareness month for this. It's called the Green Light Project. What is that about?
Yes, so we are, you know, the campaign, it's a national campaign that it's really intended to highlight these struggles, you know, that homeless youth are experiencing, which may be lack of healthy meals. Therefore, they face like physical and mental struggles on their health. They are unable to graduate school. They face violence on the streets. It's amazing, but 1 in 5 runaway youth are victims of human trafficking. And almost 70%, 68% of all youth that have expressed being trafficked or engaged in survival sex state that happened while they were homeless and living on the streets. So the impact, and of course, you know, this triples into substance abuse, early death, and those who make it through that, they have a higher chance of experiencing homelessness as adults. So this campaign, it's intended to shed light in these struggles and how can we help. So the national campaign invites anybody in the community to put a green light bulb in your porch, in your window, businesses. You know, now lights are amazing. You can do anything with batteries. They change colors. So if there's any display window that you can turn green for the month of November, we'll provide you a poster. And it's just a way to open conversations. We are also inviting sports teams, and thank you to the sports teams that have joined, to play a game wearing green shoelaces. Delta College already did 2 games, their female women's basketball, women's volleyball. This coming Saturday, we're having their men's basketball team wear green shoelaces. We'll be there handing out information, green ribbons. And it's a fun way to really, you know, highlight why green. Green, it's the color for homeless youth. This afternoon, we're having our Light of the Night mixer where we invite people. We have pizza, Dutch Bros. Shout out to Dutch Bros. They'll be providing some free drinks to the people attending. We'll have some music and we'll like turn on little glow sticks to take a picture of everybody attending, just making sure that we light up the night green. Tomorrow, actually, we'll be in Sacramento with three events. We'll be at Oak Park Community Center at 2 o'clock. Then we'll be in Christ Temple Missionary Baptist Church and at the gas station on 1 and Auburn Boulevard. We'll be there from 3:30 to 6:30, just handing out flyers, information, and shining a light, a green light on youth homelessness.
Elizabeth, thank you so much. You have a lot of events lined up for people to say hi and also, more importantly, to support you and your nonprofit.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. You can find more information at weshallprevail.org and hope you some of you can join us.
Elizabeth Sanchez is the Director of Community Engagement at Prevail, which works with at-risk youth experiencing homelessness, not only in San Joaquin County, but surrounding counties as well. Tonight, they're going to be holding the Light Up the Night Mixer. It is happening from 6 to 7 p.m. at Weberstown Mall in Stockton. And as Elizabeth laid out, they have lots of other events happening in the coming days as well. Still ahead, as you're planning your holiday feast, chances are you're going to be thinking about wine. Our wine expert, Rick Cushman, is going to simplify pairings with a focus on what's grown in our backyard. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Schlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We are rounding the corner to Thanksgiving. You might already be busy with plans to go shopping for that recipe you want to try, or maybe you're going to have a few Friendsgiving events and are starting to think about what to bring to the party. Well, if your list involves wine, we have you covered. Every year around the holidays, we like to get an update on the wine industry, what's new, what's changed, and a few suggestions of what to share with family and friends. Wine expert and New York Times best-selling author Rick Cushman joins us yet again today. He has some great suggestions and tips for holiday parties. He can also help us get out of our comfort zones a little bit when it comes to wine and, of course, share an outlook for California wines in the years to come. Hey, Rick, we're back again.
Happy early Thanksgiving, Vicki. You're right. Let's get in the mood. You were talking about some very serious subjects, and I think we need to find, everybody needs to find a little joy in their lives, too, to cope.
Yes, I completely agree with that. We are almost at the end of 2023. I mean, how did this harvest look? How were the wines this year?
Well, you know, every year about this time we talk, and every year I say this is a weird year. But this year, it was a good weird year. You know, and it's true of pretty much every ag product. You know, it was a late start, as we all know, because it rained all the way into late spring. And then it was in California, about the only place on earth. It was a relatively cool summer and it never really heat spiked. And so it was a long, slow, late harvest. In fact, it was probably the latest harvest in years, maybe in decades. Maybe 2011 was pretty close, too. But the And what that means, and this is why, you know, first thing to remember, although, you know, whoever really shops for vintage, unless you're really buying elite wines, but 2023 will be a good vintage. And because they got a lot of hang time, and hang time rocks. What hang time means is that the grapes stay out there and they grow, and it's really true of all fruits. They grow evenly and smoothly, and the sugars don't spike. And I know when you go wine tasting and they always talk about the bricks and, you know, it's a different word for sugar. But what it is the sugar levels determines when they pick. So sometimes the rest of the grape's maturity in terms of developing flavors are not ready, but the sugars are high and they can't wait. And so then they have to pick. Like last year, we had this giant heat spike in September. And if you remember, and so a lot of folks were rushing to pick because all of a sudden, you know, the grapes needed to get off the vine. This year, it's been the opposite of a problem. In some cases, they're working to get them ripe even now. There's still some out there.
Wow. So is harvesting still taking place for some varietals in some parts of the state?
There are a few, you know, and I haven't talked to anybody in the last, I'll call it 8 or 10 days, but in the middle of last week, I talked to a couple of friends out in Napa and one up in the foothills, and the general sense was maybe 5 to 10% of the grapes are still out there. You know, the late ripening grapes or grapes, you know, from our area like Zin and Petite Syrah and Syrah Cabernet out in Napa, you know, those grapes that are big, dark, heavy reds tend to ripen late. And because it has been so mellow, that's been really good. Downside, our friend rain. And, you know, luckily so far, although this last storm might not have been great and there's more coming, but because it was pretty strong on the coast, particularly the North Coast, the rain makes a couple problems. One, they could get some rot. You know, the bunches are tight. Second, it makes it difficult to get in the fields. You know, when they're picking, even when they're picking by hand, they have these little gondolas on tractors that go behind where they're putting the grapes in. So, and it's muddy in there and all kinds of other stuff. And so, you know, it makes it for a slow pick. Most are off. But I'm sure there's some wineries out there still, even tonight, Jay, going, man, would this rain just hold up so I can get everything out?
So this year was weird, but in a good way. And that's great to hear in November. But I would imagine, you know, throughout the year, it might have been kind of nerve-wracking for some winemakers not knowing, you know, what was going to happen, what the result was going to be.
Yes, yes. It's kind of like a first or second date with somebody you really, really like. And you go, what's going to go wrong? Well, and that's kind of how it was going all year. They're going, okay, every year there's been something crazy. You know, my date suddenly decided, I don't know, it's time to give me a Ferrari or something. But and so everybody was waiting for the heat spike or the early storm or the fires, which also didn't come. And that has also been a problem in recent vintages. So, you know, what that's going to do is it's going to kind of, the wine supply has been interesting lately. You know, there's, and we've talked about this, there's a bit of an oversupply as people start to drink many other things, and there was a lot of grapes planted. Last couple vintages have been rather small, a little bit smaller than average. This one will probably be a little larger than average, maybe not huge. So there will be a lot of it out there. But that's some other nervousness too. So if you're an individual winery and you go, oh, good, I got a lot of my wine. But if you're looking at the market, you're going, oh, wait, I have a lot of my wine. Now I have to sell it into a market that's got a little less room for me. And so that, you know, it's farming any product, you know, and winemaking is fundamentally farming. You know, God bless those folks. It is really hard.
You know, I think about, you know, competing beverages. You know, there's obviously, you know, you have craft beer, you have like sours, seltzers, all that stuff. But also, I do think, at least anecdotally from like my friends, there's a growing number of people like teetotalers. Like they're not drinking and doing kind of like the mocktails.
Yes, yes, yes. There's this new sort of low alcohol, anti-alcohol movements, maybe not the way to say it, but just this, you know, thing going on. Folks are deciding on their own or together, you know, whether it's dry January or just, you know, dialing back. And so there are wineries that are making lower alcohol wines. Problem is that alcohol in a wine actually adds some structure. So some of those low alcohol wines, maybe not so great. Whites, sparkling wines actually are lower alcohol too. But yes, you are right. You know, people are drinking less. I feel so those of us who drink wine need have a responsibility to drink more wine. Up for it.
And responsibly. When it comes to the 20
and responsibly.
Yes. When it comes to the 2023 vintage, before we get to some recommendations for Thanksgiving, when will we be able to buy the bottle, pop it open, and have a glass? How long does that take?
Well, for the whites, you could be seeing some of them even as soon as next summer, you know, spring, summer. Some of the wines that don't get much aging, like Sauvignon Blanc, some of them will be popping out now. You know, those did get, maybe some got picked in August. Reds are for anything from a year, more likely 18 months. you know, and then depending on how they age, and wines like Cab sometimes get a lot of aging, so 2 to 3 or 4 years. But you know, think the red's going to be 18 months, the whites this time next year. And so, you know, that's what you're drinking right now is, if you look on the shelves, there's a lot of 2022 Chard and white wines out there.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio, and we're talking with Rick Cushman, the wine expert and New York Times best-selling author, about this year's harvest. And now we're just going to talk about the holidays, because typically for some people who do drink wine, they do bring wine to a party, or they want to serve it with a lot of friends. Is this the time to kind of like splurge and experiment and try different things?
Well, yes and no. So I say this every year. First off, the holidays are mostly about celebrating. So if you like celebrating about different and unique and interesting wines, go for it. But don't sweat it. I got to go sideways for one of the things that just annoys me enormously. You've heard me go through this rant before, which is how so many, like, it's whether it's some wine writers or some psalms or whomever, are make it so darn complicated. You know, and it's not. I mean, you know, the fundamental rule of wine is get wines you like, get food you like. Go for it.
When it comes, and I agree, when it comes to some of the coverage or the journalism surrounding like wine and picks, it can feel kind of like intimidating.
Yeah, because I've never understood that. And meanwhile, the industry is losing wine drinkers, and you know, the answer is, oh, let's scare people even more. I do like that some people say, what we need to do is educate people more. Right. Heck of a business model when you need to educate your consumer before they can buy your product. How about we do it the other way around? How about we make our product accessible? And you know, the other thing, it's sort of funny. I think that a lot of those folks out there feel like they need to show how sophisticated they are. But it isn't about that. And having said that, now that there are some really fun things. And as you said, if you're going to enjoy a bottle that you've been saving, a wine you really like, now, man, go for it, right? Once again, make it a wine that you like. And we can go through some pairings in just a sec. But, you know, it really is, and the other thing is, you know, Thanksgiving, there's wine writers wringing their hands about how difficult the pairing it is because there's so many foods. Well, or there's so many foods. How easy is this? It's going to be something that's going to match your wine.
Yeah. I mean, so if you're going to someone's house, because I'm thinking about like appetizer size, there's a lot of different flavors going on for Thanksgiving. You know, is there like an easy go-to choice to bring where it's kind of like a common denominator and it'll apply throughout the evening? Or should you think about, oh, I want to bring something, you know, for the appetizers. I want to bring something, you know, for the pumpkin pie. Or is there something that will apply to all meals?
Well, I say yes, although the pumpkin pie is a slightly different subject.
Tricky.
We'll get that. Yeah. But for everything else, but really my first suggestion, and is this is going to last until January 1st, including January 1st, bring some kind of sparkling. Why? Because they're delicious and they're fun and they're celebratory. And when you bring one and you give it to your hosts, they say, oh, what a cool thing to bring. And so, you know, it's just, and sparkling wine goes with all kinds of foods. And, you know, so if there's any sparklings that you like, they don't have to be super expensive, but sparkling is always a good place to start. You know, and then once it starts to get into, you know, whether whites or reds, it starts to get a tad more complicated. So once again, I say for starters, like bring something that matters to you or that may matter to them. It's a place you've been, a place they've been, you know, something like that. And then, but if you want a pair, then you start thinking about it. So should we go through some pairings?
Yeah. So let's start with appetizers. Let's just kind of like run through the meal. I mean, I'm thinking of like deviled eggs or a charcuterie platter, you know, lots of dips. Like what should you drink for appetizers?
Well, once again, the two caveats are A, sparkling is going to go with all this stuff, and B, whatever you like. But if you are trying to pair, so lighter for apps, lighter whites. Oh, rosés. Once again, rosé is another really fun wine to bring because now everybody loves rosés. And there's plenty of good ones out there and they're relatively inexpensive. And because it's Thanksgiving, can I suggest you get an American one, even though there are some brilliant French rosés, but not for a high price. But rosé will go with a lot. Lots of Sauvignon Blancs are another wines that go with a lot, though there are lovers and haters. And same thing for lighter Chardonnays. You know, Chardonnay, the cool kids don't want to like Chardonnay. It's still the most popular white grape on earth. Thank you. And then if you also like Rieslings, Rieslings are terrific with a lot of foods, and they're really good as with the foods with a little richness and maybe a little sweetness, because Rieslings have some richness and sweetness to them too.
When it comes to the meal, so there's going to be sides, there's going to be turkey. Can you have white or red? I mean, can you, because some people just, you know, they have a preference, or should you just kind of stick to one?
Yes. Well, you know, one of the fun things about a big table is if there's there's a lot of wines open, I suggest trying a little this, a little of that. By the way, that's a downside if you have a really special wine and you've got, you know, a lot of people at your table, maybe half of them might not even get around to it, or you might not get to taste it. But so just keep that in mind. But the whites, you know, some of those whites we talked about, and Riesling and Sauvignon Blanc go with a lot of the foods. And then, but I think once you start to get in the middle with Chardonnay, go for the richer ones. So those folks out there that love buttery Chardonnay, and frankly, I'm one of them, then, and don't let the cool kids tell you not to drink them. It will go so well with so many of the richer foods on your Thanksgiving table, you know, because there's, you know, whether it's the turkey, which is the, you know, tend to have a gravy, or whether it's the stuffing, or whether it's the richer foods, or whether you're doing something entirely different, like we're doing in my house. And so a richer buttery Chardonnay will rock. But in the reds, there's a go-to wine for a lot of the Thanksgiving foods, which is Pinot Noir. Again, one of my faves. But I know some people, including a person I am married to, that is not thrilled with Pinot Noir. So maybe that's not your only one. But then you go in the other direction, and our friends in the foothills and in Lodi know this wine well, which is, of course, Zinfandel. Zin is a big, rich, happy wine. It's a happy wine. And it's the time of year to drink Zin with stuff. But there are more, you know. And again, once our foothills and then Lodi, foothills maybe even more so, make like great Barbera that goes with Thanksgiving. Theirs is a little richer. It's like folks who've had Italian Barberas are going to be a little lighter and brighter. California foothill Barbera has a little bit of richness to it. And Grenache is another one. If you see it and you run across it, great with all these foods. The one caution is Cabernet, you know, the King of Reds, the most popular red wine, may not be great. And if you like it, drink it. But, you know, because it's bigger and it has bigger tannins, it may be a little more difficult to pair with some of the foods. You think about yams, for example, if you're doing yams and cab, that's probably not going to go so well because there's a sweetness to the yams.
Okay, finally, you know, we only got a couple minutes left. Dessert, it can be a little tricky, right? There's a lot of different sweet flavors going on. What do you recommend?
Yes, we do this every holiday where there's sweetness involved. Is make sure your wine really is sweeter than your dessert. So those dessert wines, whether it's Porch or any of those foothill grapes that are late harvest or Lodi or anywhere, those rock. But if, you know, and also sparkling wine because it's a clean palate. But then if you like red with chocolate, go for it. I think it's a bad pairing because what happens is there's actually acid in wine, and people don't realize that. You don't think about wine as acid. But, you know, my example is we don't think about orange juice having acid until you brush your teeth, then have your orange juice. And so the sweetness in dessert or in chocolate will make your wine taste a little sour. But if it's your choice this time of year, I say go for it.
What are you going to be serving for Thanksgiving? That's my last question.
Well, this is fun. So we have been lately doing this sort of gathering of strays. Last year went to dinner. This year we're sort of gathering in our house. We're going to have all kinds of stuff. I'll make some pot stickers. We're going to have a lot of different apps. We are going to have some turkey, but it's going to be turkey sausage. You know, so we're doing the fun buffet. There'll be some fish, you know, and what I like about what we're doing, and this goes back to our Thanksgiving pairings, is there's going to be something for every taste and something for every wine. So I get to open a whole bunch of wines that I like. And really, Roy, if you are hosting, I might add that that's really kind of a cool thing too. So when you're hosting a party, one way to think about it is you've got a whole bunch of guests in your house and you want them to be happy. But make sure you've opened something for yourself too, because I think that's one of the things that make meals and then wine sharing great, is to tell people, I really love this wine, try it. You know, I think that makes it fun. And frankly, we know from experience that when people tell people wine's good, they're going to like it.
Yep.
And if you really want them to like it, tell them it's expensive.
Rick, thank you so much. It's always great to have you. It's always a treat.
Always a treat.
And happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And if you miss any of Rick's picks in this conversation, it's going to be posted shortly after 10 a.m. on our Insight page. So you can go ahead and download it and get your right pairings, which really... The options are endless for your holidays. And that is it for Insight. You can learn about all of our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to join the conversation, you can always email us at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producer Sarit Lashinsky, managing editor Arm Sarkissian. Our digital producer is Chris Feltz. Insight's technical director and engineer is Mark Jones. And our show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. We are taking the week off for the Thanksgiving break. We will catch you back here after the holiday. Enjoy.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.